KALW.
I mean, I'm a felon. You know what I mean? Like, what do you think of me?
How do people in prison feel when they hear voters are choosing between a prosecutor or a felon for president?
That language is not just symbolic to me. It means something to me. I am a human being.
And even though they can't vote, incarcerated folks will still be affected by some of the state ballot measures.
So that's what I truly feel this proposition is about. What type of neighbor do you want coming home to you? The person who was treated like a slave for two decades?
Uncuffed goes into San Quentin State Prison for the special elections episode. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Election day is just 2 weeks away, and there's so much more on the ballot than just a choice for who'll be president next. Today, we're going to hear from a group of people who will be directly affected by the results, even though they aren't allowed to vote. Uncuffed host Ton Tran went back into the San Quentin Media Center to talk about some key issues, including two major state propositions. Prop 6 would remove the language of involuntary servitude from the state constitution, and Prop 36 would increase penalties for theft and drug crimes. And before we hear their discussion, the producers wanted me to tell you the opinions expressed in this episode are just that, opinions. They're speaking for themselves and not for Uncuffed or KALW. Here's host Ton Tran speaking with producers Anthony Gomez, William Harris, and Ryan Pagan.
I remember the first time I voted when I got out, and the thing that I did not expect to receive was an I voted sticker. And what I did not expect is to be how freaking proud I was to have this I voted sticker stamped on my phone. I put that thing on my phone. I want everybody to know I'm a voting citizen, right? I cares about my community, right? I was really excited because I voted on all of the things down ballot. I wasn't as excited about this election, this presidential election, but it's very real and it's very relevant. So I want to ask y'all about this current presidential election real quick. Is that cool? Go ahead.
You know, you mentioned the general election. I just am not really excited about either candidates. It's sad that it seems like every 4 years we're constantly, you know, the American people, we're constantly voting on the lesser of two evils.
Mm. Ryan, talking about the lesser of two evils, right now we got Harris, who is the prosecutor candidate, versus Trump, the felon candidate, right? And it's like, all right, so you want me to vote between this person who incarcerated thousands of people in California, people who I know personally, she has intervened on their cases to make sure they did not get released from prison long after she's left office, right? Like, this is the harmful legacy she has left behind. And our other option is Trump, the felon, as they're calling him, right? And it's hard for me to even say the word, right? As much as I have disdain for the fella, you know what I mean? It's harder for me to say felon than it is for me to say Trump. Aunt, tell us more. How does that land with you hearing about this?
Oh, man. So, funny story, right? I remember not too long ago, I'm having a conversation with a good friend of mine. And probably not the best idea to talk politics, right? But she goes on and is like, you know, well, Trump's he's a felon and he's this and he's that. You know what I mean? And that's why I'm a vote for Kamala and this, this, that, and the other. And, you know, she has some valid points, but when she said that word felon, it like stung me. And I almost wanted to tell her, like, I mean, I'm a felon. You know what I mean? Like, what do you think of me? You know? But I know she doesn't think of me like in any negative way. And I know she thinks highly of me. But I don't know why I took it personal. Like, it hurt. Like, damn, he said he's a felon. Like, that's fucked up. But that's not even who, like, I would, like, have favor for. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, I'll name this. there's plenty of other reasons to dislike Trump than just the fact that he recently got charged with a crime. People disliked him long before that, right? So I feel like we should focus on the issues like Ryan is saying, like Ant is saying, versus the inflammatory language. Will, how you feel about that?
Well, yes, I hear what you guys are saying. I do. But if I were a politician, I'd be doing exactly what they're doing. Because the bottom line is, people don't give a shit about the issues. They don't care. The reason why these politicians mix the issues up and don't actually address them is because the people do not vote for them on issues. They just don't. They vote on personality. You got this buffoon. Donald Trump is a buffoon. And that's just Will Harris's opinion. Donald Trump is a buffoon. He's a moron. You know, people are eating dogs and all that stupid things he was saying. No, that's ridiculous. However, people love that. They love the bravado, the entertainment of it all. And they vote on that. Because if they were actually voting on issues, they wouldn't vote for either one of these two. Because none of them have said anything about what they're actually going to do.
Thank you for, I really appreciate how.
You're very passionate.
Yeah.
That's passion.
That's passion.
Yeah. I see there's a lot of sweat beating down your forehead too. My veins.
So real quick, I really appreciate how you grounded that, and I welcome that perspective. So we're talking about, you know, this presidential election. We're kind of zoomed out a little bit, you know, and from the top end, I said, man, this is not where really I'm passionate about. I care more about down ballot things. So I want to zoom in and talk about some of the issues that we in California are looking at. Specifically some propositions. How's that feel?
Sounds great.
Sounds good.
Let's do it.
Feels good to me.
That said, there's two propositions that's up for voting this November here in California that is near and dear to me and applies to us. The first one is Proposition 6. Who wants to talk a little bit more about Proposition 6? Tell me about Proposition
6. Yeah, let me get into that because I did a whole little story about that last season. Not about Prop 6, but about involuntary servitude. You can go back and listen to the episode. We talked about how we were required to have jobs in prison, everything from working in the kitchen to laying concrete. So where we're at now is with Proposition 6. I've got notes to make sure I get this totally right, so hang with me here. If you vote yes on this proposition, you're telling the state to amend its constitution and ban involuntary servitude. The California legislature voted on a similar proposal a couple years ago, and they did not pass it. Part of the reason for that was the bill would have required the state to pay us incarcerated workers minimum wage. Politicians like the governor were concerned about the cost. It would have been something like $1.5 billion a year. So they took out the part about the pay and are now just asking voters to decide if the language of involuntary servitude should be removed from the Constitution. If voters say yes, then we won't be forced to work. We will have to give our consent and we won't be punished if we say no. Will, what do you think about that?
I've been discriminated against a lot in my lifetime growing up where because I've been in neighborhoods where I was the only black kid. I've been in neighborhoods where I was the only person of color there. And so when you talk about indentured servitude and when you talk about slavery, my perspective is working is a fact of life. Everybody who wants to take care of himself has a job. So I don't mind having a job. I don't mind working. I don't even mind the pay, so to speak. I mean, I do, but I don't have to pay for food. I don't have to pay for clothing. I don't have to pay for my where to sleep. And yes, now the food is disgusting here. I get that. So yes, I would want a better quality of food and that you do have to pay for. However, I can navigate myself through that. But it's being discriminated against, it's being treated inhumanely is what means something to me. And you said that the legislature isn't willing to legislate that, hey, we have to treat human beings like humans. I did not give up my right to be human because I committed a crime. I didn't give that up. Nobody gives that up. So now that I'm a slave, basically, because that's what I am right now. I am a slave. Because once that's in the Constitution, that's how they can treat me. That language is not just symbolic to me. It means something to me. I am a human being, and all I'm asking for is to treat me humanely. That is it.
Absolutely. And I want to get your thoughts real quick before I close out this piece of it.
Well, I just think one thing to consider is, you know, the public, they have this misconception about people deserving punishment after they've committed a crime. They probably have this like old-fashioned mindset, like idea that we deserve to be in prison and breaking rocks with sledgehammers and shit, you know? And they think that that's fair. I think what people forget is that prison itself is the punishment. Like, we are ostracized from society. You know, we're removed from our loved ones. We're removed from the communities that we harmed, you know? And there's a lot of mental, emotional, physical struggles that comes with that that we have to endure.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah, I think, man, like, y'all said it beautifully. Like, yeah, I feel really moved in this moment. There's a heavy feeling in the room when we're talking about this subject, because this is something that we had to live through. And just in this room alone, there's over 100 years of incarceration. If people aren't coming back to prison, that means we are increasing our public safety. But if we continue to call people slaves and treat them as slaves while they're incarcerated and dehumanize them, how can we bring back home healed neighbors into our community? So that's what I truly feel this proposition is about. What type of neighbor do you want coming home to you? The person who was treated like a slave for 2 decades, or a person that was given the resources they need to make sure they never hurt another human being again? Let's move into another election issue that's been on the front of my mind, at least when I'm thinking about voting. Prop 36. Ooh, spicy. Ooh.
It's a hard one.
Come on. Right? Prop 36. From the official voter information guide, Prop 36 makes several key changes related to punishment for theft and drug crimes. First, it increases punishment for some of these crimes. Second, it creates a new treatment-focused court process for some drug possession crimes, including for the possession of fentanyl. Third, it requires courts to warn people convicted of selling or providing illegal drugs to others that they can be charged with murder if they're doing so and someone dies.
Just to be clear, from that same voter guide, a yes vote means people convicted of certain drug or theft crimes could receive increased punishment.
Right. I know there's some different feelings about this ballot measure even amongst us, so let's talk about it. Anthony, I know that this proposition means something to you and that you've been really struggling with this proposition. Like, do you mind talking more about it?
Yeah, so about 2 years ago, almost 2 years now, my childhood best friend passed away, and that hurt me. That was the first time I experienced real loss while I've been incarcerated. I remember I call home and I'm talking to my boy Elijah, and I'm like, "What's up, dude? Like, what's going on?" And he's just crying. He's like, "Dude, Sammy died last night." And I just like took a step back, like, what do you mean? Like, I just talked to him like maybe a couple months prior, you know what I mean? And he was with all my brothers and everybody was chilling. And it's like when we were kids, you know, like third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, like some of my best memories growing up were spent with Sammy. I know his whole family, like that's really like a brother to me. And just to hear like my brother and Elijah, like, dude, Sammy's gone. And he overdosed. It hurt, you know, like how, you know what I mean? Like how, like why? There's so much people that are being impacted by this, right? I feel that if people that distribute it are held accountable, like who in their right mind is going to be like, I'm going to give somebody something knowing it's going to kill them? and knowing that I'm gonna be held accountable for murder or whatever it may be, right? I don't think anybody wants to do that. Nobody wants to give somebody something and just let them die, you know? And it sucks that's where we're at, and it continues to happen, and it continues to affect people just the way it affected me, you know?
Man, thank you for sharing that. And loss is hella real, and I don't...
I mean, this is definitely a tough conversation, because we do want to make sure that our communities are saved, right? And that, you know, these fentanyl-laced drugs aren't being, you know, distributed out there, you know. So I can see why a proposition like this was written up. You know, it's reactionary. Like, there's a problem out there. There's a fentanyl problem out there in the United States, especially in California. And so how do we address this problem? And in some way, this is kind of reminiscent to the crack, you know, epidemic in the 80s, where people are smoking crack or people are dying off crack, you know. And so let's create a law to where we start locking people up, you know what I mean? And so this is kind of reminiscent of that. And I've had family members, you know, locked up for drugs, you know. And so I'm worried that this proposition is basically the same thing as, you know, those mandatory minimum sentences that they were handing out, and those life sentences. They were giving people life sentences for, and the majority of people that were getting booked on these crimes were Black and brown people.
You know, I agree. You know, there is a lot of people that are negatively impacted by, you know, being charged with some of these crimes and having to do prison terms. And I specifically am affected by that as well, because both of my parents went to prison for drug-related offenses in the late 90s. And the problems that I had to endure following that, because my parents were incarcerated, it's immense, right? But I will say that when my mom went to prison for drug-related offense, she did about a year and some change. But when she got out, she was a completely different person. And I commend my mother for that, because that did change her life. And she did do everything she can following that to give us a good life. You know what I mean? So she did use that time to reinvent herself and rehabilitate herself. And she did give us a fairly good life following that. So it's hard, you know what I mean?
Man, thank you for sharing, Aunt, and bringing mothers into the room too, because this makes me think about my own mother, who was incarcerated in the 90s for crack, you know, constantly incarcerated for it, and cycled in and out of incarceration, which left me and my 7 siblings in foster care because my mother was addicted to a drug and couldn't get the help that she needed. Instead, she was incarcerated for it. And because of that, 5 out of 7 of my siblings have been incarcerated, right? So what they proposed as a solution actually created more people incarcerated, right? And did the reverse of what they were trying to do. And I just want to say that I strongly believe something needs to be done about fentanyl.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
For sure.
We need to do something, but I don't think this is it. They said that by incarcerating my mom, the goal was that she was going to stop drugs, she was going to change her life, pull her children out of foster care. It's been over 20 years. To this day, my mom is still on drugs, and she is currently houseless today and still getting swept in and out of the system. Now, my oldest brother is on drugs. Now, my oldest brother is houseless. And now he is being cycled in and out of incarceration. So when I see Proposition 36, right, I don't see just a bunch of words and legalese. What I see is my mother's face. I see my older brother's face. And I see all of the people who's been advocating for their dead loved ones, for their loved ones who passed away because of fentanyl. And that's why I think it's so important that I hold the pain that you hold and at the same time say, this is not our solution. And I'll add to that too, is that it's been estimated that if this bill, if this proposition was to pass, it would cost us tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, to incarcerate all of these new people.
Yeah, it's difficult because it's hard to look somebody like Anthony in the face and say I'm against this bill when his friend, his childhood friend, was affected. You know, that's difficult in itself. And I'm not against people paying for a crime, being punished for crimes they've committed. I'm not against people who want something done about something that has affected them. I'm not against that. What I do believe is this is deja vu all over again.
Real quick, Ant, there's been a lot that's been said, right? And I really want to thank Will for saying what he said. It's hard to look in your face and be like, man, I'm against this bill. But I'm so grateful that he said, I'm not against a solution. I'm not against doing something about this. I'm not against accountability for people who commit harm. I'm not against that, you know? So after hearing what you've heard so far, how are you feeling? Like, what's coming up for you?
So, yeah, I mean, I'm feeling a lot of things right now, right? And I'm grateful for the alternative perspectives. And one thing I will say is that, like, I agree, right? I don't think that a punitive, hardcore approach is necessary, but is a solution necessary? Absolutely.
Woo! Feel like we got to take a collective breath, man. That was a lot. It was heavy. So I want to close this out today with something that we typically do in programs in prison, right? At the end of a class or self-help program, you know, there's a lot of emotions, a lot of heavy, deep work that we had to do and hard discussions. And that's what we had today. We had a lot of deep things that came up. We had a lot of hard discussions. Let's do a checkout. A few words. How are you feeling as you're closing out? What are some closing thoughts? And I want to pass it to you, Ryan.
I feel great, huh? I'm very proud of all of you guys. And just, I'm kind of sitting back and hearing, you know, Will and Anthony and Yutan talk. And I'm like, damn, these guys are incarcerated. Or, you know, Ton, for your case, you were formerly incarcerated. Like, dude, we sound smart. You know what I mean? And it just didn't matter whether or not I agreed or disagreed with you. You know, I was just amazed, like, how educated and informed all you guys are. So I'm really thankful for being at this, you know, round table, you know, with you guys. Will?
I feel invigorated and I feel excited and I feel saddened all at the same time. This is the first time I've ever had an opportunity to do anything like this. Most of my prison time has been spent in, you know, 180s, level fours, which are the highest maximum security, where I had to worry about violence all day, every day. But being around the people that I'm around, I'm very encouraged and hopeful. And I'm very proud, you know, of the people that I see. I'm very proud of you getting out and doing the things that you're doing.
And how you feeling?
I feel grateful, man. I feel good because my need for community has been met. You know, I feel honored to have partook in this conversation. I know I came in with a strong belief because I was directly impacted, but the feedback I was able to receive and having an open mind to it rather than just shutting everybody off, like, that really helped put things into perspective for me. So I just feel grateful to be a part of this, man. I feel good. Thank you for coming. Thank you for contributing your knowledge and all that you do out there with Ella Baker Center.
Thank you, y'all. For real, thank y'all so much. We didn't get to vote on paper, but today we got to vote on the ballot of public opinion. You know, and that for that, I'm grateful that we got to go on this journey together, y'all. And I love y'all. I'm curious to see what the public has to say about this.
You think we have the potential of swaying some votes, man, from this episode?
I think so, because it's information. And that's what people are lacking, you know? So when you fill that void with information, you help them become more informed, right? And you give them an opportunity, at least, to make better decisions. So I think so.
That excerpt from the Uncuffed podcast was made by the crew at San Quentin State Prison. William Harris, Anthony Gomez, Ryan Pagan, Andre Davis, Jeremy Strain, Matt Shepard, and Vincent O'Bannon. The Uncuffed team also includes Eric Abercrombie, Kathy Novak, Nina Gensler-Debs, Sonia Paul, and Shirai Cannon. Special thanks to Uncuffed host and advisory board member Ton Tran. You can hear the whole episode wherever you get your podcasts. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation and listeners like you. All content is approved by an information officer. Today's Cross Currents team includes James Rowlands, Gonadie Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Molly Blair Salyer, Shirin Adil, Hanisha Herjani, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, Zuni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.